You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome, curious minds out there. Tonight, we have the honor of having an interesting guest with us. He's a highly respected author, researcher, teacher, who peers into the depth of human consciousness and the mysteries of the universe. In 2000, Oliver began a transformative odyssey to Virginia, where he attended the highly acclaimed Gateway Voyage seminar at the Monroe Institute. Maybe he can tell us about that a little bit more. This key experience ignited a deeper passion for yoga in him, leading him to undertake formal training in Byron Bay, Australia, the following year. Oliver began exploring the teachings of various traditions and became a certified yoga teacher, a journey that would take him across the globe, from the shores of Guatemala to the serene landscapes of Switzerland. Yeah. Oliver has dedicated his life to shedding light on the mysterious phenomena of out-of-body experiences and multidimensional consciousness. And through his books, workshops, and seminars, he empowers people to travel beyond the boundaries of the physical body and explore the limitless potential of their mind. Yeah. Oliver, thank you for being our guest tonight.
Thanks for having me.
I would like to give the floor to Brandon right away, because I know that he has a fantastic and profound thought on the subject. Brandon.
As anything, right? It can be deep. There's a guy who walks around with a little fart machine in his pocket, and he lets out these fake farts in New York City. And even I can turn this so deep to see how pattern interruption it is for neural programming and to get oneself out of, you know what I mean? So yes, dude, let's go deep on all of this stuff. So there's a book that I read this year, early on in the year, called The Unquiet Dead by Dr. Edith Fiore. Have you ever heard of this?
I've heard of it, but I haven't read it, I have to admit, unfortunately.
I'm really interested in the way that people can be regressed, the way that people can feel that they have alternate storylines, or that they've taken place in alternate galaxies at some point, or that there's even things that have happened to them in this physical reality that get repressed. Something I'm so fascinated about the consciousness itself is how the phenomena, near-death experiences, and you perceive the world all sort of interplay together. Now, one of my main curiosities with this is, why can we shut off? And this is something that I'm curious to at you, as somebody who sees from an out-of-body perspective, what happens in the consciousness of someone who has missing time, for someone who has something so traumatic that happens to them that they shut it off and then it needs to be brought up later. How does this also, and I know this is a lot, but this is one answer for you, and I know that. How does this also tie into screen memories? How are entities allegedly able to take and apprehend the way you see them physically? And multiple people sitting there see multiple things, owls or one of these things. So it all, I think, has to do with consciousness, like your ability to view, perceive, and be an active participant in this participatory reality. So what do you think of that?
Ooh, that's a lot. Maybe you can chunk it up for me, and start with like one question at a time.
Fair enough. Let's start with how screen memories occur in the contact phenomena. What do you think's going on with there? To where do you think it's the entity's ability to control the way we see it, or is it our inability to see it for what it is, and we replace it with something as to preserve our own sanity?
I think both is possible, but I tend to go with the latter, because I know for myself that I have so-called clickouts, where during my out-of-body experiences, I'm being fed a chunk of information, for instance, and my brain is not able to handle it. It could be a very complex type of data package, let's call it that. And the brain will just shut off, and I find myself in a blackout. When I come to it, I know I haven't slept, because sleep has a certain quality to it. And I'm very familiar with falling asleep and waking up from sleep. But Robert Monroe, the founder of the Monroe Institute in Virginia, discovered this phenomenon called, well, he called it click out. And you know, it hasn't been explored in depth. There's certain theories, of course, that trainers have come up with as to why they occur. But I believe that one reason could be the inability of the brain to handle such information at the time. So there's just a general shutdown. But there's also a self-protective modus, let's call it that, that could, you know, be necessary, especially when it comes to re-traumatizing someone. You know, there are certain things that can occur during an out-of-body experience that might be able to trigger a trauma that is already in place. And I feel that there is some self-protection going on, that the mind in this case knows how to shut off, you know, and to protect the viewer or the person was experiencing in that very moment, because not everything has to come into waking consciousness. And so I'm open for both theories, but I've also experienced during a recent hypnosis that there are entities indeed, you know, that do have an effect on our body mind system, not necessarily the soul part of it, the actual consciousness, but our body-mind system. And it can be deeply affected by other entities.
Yeah, it's like sound plays a part in this. It's fascinating how almost fragile the human consciousness is and our ability to retain in control and sovereign, which sort of that's what's up for grabs here. These click-out moments that you're talking about, that's terrifying, right? Blackouts, people can say, are alcohol induced, right? But let's say you're just walking along doing your thing and all of a sudden you hit a portal, or you see an owl and then you're missing 3 hours. You're like, what the hell went on? Like, that the brain would protect you in a way makes sense. Do you think though that that's to the advantage of the entity? I get in the immediacy, yes. But what I say is that it means that then on a societal level, they can do whatever they want essentially, because we'll just sort of fear our way into compartmentalizing it or not saying anything or not doing anything, or maybe we're physically incapable because they know what they do to us, basically. Sort of a power that they're given. It's interesting. I'm just curious about your thoughts on this. I just found it fascinating.
You know, I'm trying to look at the larger reality system, you know, and I very much agree with Thomas Campbell that the physical reality is a simulation, you know, some kind of virtual reality. And consciousness as such uses this physical reality to, you know, gather experiences. So our physical bodies are mere avatars, you know, that are from an out-of-body perspective. Oftentimes when I look at back at the physical world, it looks like a hologram. It's not real. You know, I sense and I feel and I see the non-realness of the physical world, and experiencing other realities also tells me that there's so many different types of reality systems out there, you know, possibly millions. And all of these are inhabited by different species, different entities, groups of entities, and humans are just one people, you know, it's just one, they're weak, you know, in comparison to other entities, I have to say they're weak. This whole projection, I tend to look at it as a movie almost from the out of body experience, you know. From a non-physical perspective, I'm looking at almost a three-dimensional screen where things are playing out. And I realize that these avatars don't have powers without consciousness. You know, they're puppets to consciousness. Mm-hmm. And they only have a certain lifespan. And some of them are weaker and some of them are stronger, depending on their, you know, the way their system is designed or is maintained. And some people tend to get, and I want to use the word attacked, but they get bothered by different entities and other people don't. And I haven't found out why, you know, there's no clear pattern that shows me, oh, it's women between the ages of 17 and 25, maybe, you know, or guys between 75 and 85. No, it's not that. It's not clear to me as to why they attach themselves to certain individuals and not to others.
Just so interesting, because then free will is my question on that. Really, the ultimate thing is free will. Like, where does that come into place with something either being able to manipulate you from the outside or you just being able to hop in and out? And really, then it would be that free will applies to you as your car. It's just, this is your car, you know, and it's just tricky to see that there are other realities for some people, because not a lot of people spend as much time out of their body as you do. And I'm fascinated by it. I've never been out. I just think it's interesting. Very cool. Daniel, what do you think, man?
Speechless.
I was muted.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I'm fascinated. I've talked to Oliver before, and we had a long talk for my other podcast, and it's I still have to think about it now and then, because I really had a completely different view on all the things that Oliver's talking about, but he changed my mind on some things. I want to ask you a question. When we started, you asked that in a certain state, your brain gets fed with some sort of data package. So can you explain that a little bit more? What do you mean when you say data package? What's within that package?
Well, as you travel through, you know, different realities or different reality systems, you encounter different entities and, you know, be it spirit guides or even what we call dead people or complete strangers that have nothing to do with our surroundings here. You know, you might want to call them aliens, although, you know, looking at the physical reality, we're all aliens to someone. Here we use verbal communication as our means of communication, or written communication. Out there, it's all telepathic. It's all frequencies. And the way data is being transmitted is much like, you know, our data here online is transmitted from Germany to the United States. It's not verbal. It's being translated along the way. So sometimes I get clear signals that translate immediately into information that I can understand or can't understand. You know, that of course happens too. And sometimes the amount of data is larger than my brain can handle. You know, it needs time to process and translate. It all has to be translated at the end of the day into something that is already within my frame of reference. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to understand. So, you know, they might send me a very complex set of data, you know, and my brain is only able to take on so much, and it'll translate whatever it can, and the rest just goes to waste. Which always, you know, it's always a problem or a challenge, because you never know when you get back from an out-of-body experience, was that all? Was that all that I have received? I'm generally open for the possibility that maybe a couple of days later, I'm receiving new information. I know it's already there, but it's being spit out by my system. And I might be at the grocery store, you know, shopping, and all of a sudden I'm getting flashing images or even words or thoughts, you know, that are not mine. And I'm very well able to differentiate between my own thoughts and the thoughts that come in from somewhere else. And it's actually kind of funny, because you might find yourself in a very weird situation. All of a sudden you have stuff appearing, you know, and you got to deal with that moment, because it's there and you can't just push it away. Fortunately, it doesn't happen all that often. I find that it happens most often when the experience itself, the out-of-body experience itself, is a prolonged one. Oftentimes they only last like a few minutes, but then once in a while I'll have an experience that lasts a lot longer. And those usually bring these click outs with them. And then I know, you know, something has been fed, and I'll just wait, you know, days, sometimes weeks before the information appears.
Well, that's interesting. Never heard the term click out before, to be honest.
It's something very specific to the Monroe method. You know, Robert Monroe just came up with this expression for lack of better words, you know, because it was new to him as well. And he, as he started to work with people, people would experience these click outs, you know. It was just a sharp cut in awareness. And then all of a sudden they'd be back and they would have no idea that it actually happened. It's just that from the outside perspective, you can see it because someone goes silent. Monroe worked with his explorers in a way that he had them channel information. So they were, you know, on a bench or on a bed, and there was a microphone, and he would ask questions as they were going out of body, and they would describe whatever was happening around them. And then all of a sudden they would go silent and nothing would happen. And then maybe 5, 10 or 30 minutes later, they'd be back. Those click outs in duration can be very short, but they can also be a half hour long.
It's quite interesting.
What do you think's occurring during the clickouts?
Well, as I said, I don't know. I'm not conscious. I can only guess. The way I perceive it is my hardware is not able to handle the amount of data, or it's something that is where the self-protective modus goes on automatically, saying, you know, we don't need to experience this at this point because... Well, I don't know why. There might be different reasons, you know.
It's interesting. That say that they get stored information that will be useful later. It's almost like, okay, yeah, we need to physically let you experience the download of the information, but you don't have access to it. It's like locked files. You know something's in there, but you don't have access. And then later on, it'll become useful, you know.
Right.
Interesting.
And not always, you know, as I said, because the way our brain translates these non-physical data streams is much different from the processing of physical data streams.
Yeah. What is your best tip for getting out of body? I've never had an out of body experience that I'm aware of. I'm not an experiencer that I'm aware of. UFOs don't hang out, and not a high five and Bigfoot guy. How do you get out of body, man? I've got a lot of tips. I've tried them all. What are yours? Please get me out of the body so I can fly around with y'all and have some fun.
Just do it. It really comes down to, you know, allowing yourself to do it. I think a lot of people look at the phenomenon and have certain expectations. And that, again, blocks us from having these type of experiences. Each individual has to go their own path. You know, there is no one tip or one piece of advice that I can give, because I need to know the person. When I teach these things in workshops, you know, I look at every single person closely and see, you know, where are they at in life? What have they brought with them? You know, what's the baggage they carry? A lot of times it's subconscious fears that they haven't dealt with, or trauma could also be the case. Or they're in general carrying belief systems that are counterproductive, you know, that are not serving the purpose. So there's a lot of cleanup involved that, you know, I take people through. And then we start doing exercises that allow us to understand our multidimensional self a little better. And I think that's also a key. We're raised to believe that we are physical matter, you know, that our essence is somehow stuck in our head or in our body. And it took me a number of years to realize that that's not the case. A human doesn't have a soul. The soul has a human. Consciousness does not reside inside the body, but the body resides in consciousness. You know, it's all the other way around. So we got to figure out a way to change that belief and that conditioning that we've come to accept, because we were brought up that way. That's what we're being told, that's what we are being taught. And some people realize it early on in the process, and others will never realize it because the belief is so strong that there's no way out. Today, looking back at all the efforts I've made, and it took me a number of years to really get to the point where I could astral travel at will. And even today, I can't just lay down on my bed and say, I'm going to astral travel tonight. You know, it has to be, I feel it. You know, I can feel it when I'm healthy, when I'm strong, when I'm well balanced. I have no problem getting into the out of body state. But it's actually not that there is something leaving the body. And we're made to believe that that's the case. You know, consciousness is. And the body is a mere avatar being used by consciousness. And all I have to do is really withdraw my true self from the physical sensory input. Damn. And once I get there, I'm fully out of body anyways, you know, but I'm just trying to push the button, the stop button on all the physical senses. That's really what I'm doing.
The most fascinating perspective I've ever heard when it comes to this, because yes, it does. Even with all the disciplines we have to say, oh no, I'm not my body, I'm bigger than this, and there are multi-level bodies, the way that you put it was so interesting, because now it's just this and again it ties together all the things that we're just like, yeah, that's the case, we're vessels, you know, or vessels rather. We Grays talk about that we're vessels and just souls driving these things around and all these things like what you say. But man, to think of it like it's just filling this part of the container for a little while, but what you're doing really to get out of body is remembering that all you're doing is filling a container over here to use it for a while, and right now it's asleep and you don't need it, or right now you've given it permission to go do something else, and then that withdraws back into yourself. And so what you're doing is exploring the withdrawing back in. That's fascinating. What an outstanding perspective. I'll never look at it the same, man. Thank you, Oliver. Wow.
Oh, you're welcome.
You know, not too long ago, I've talked to a friend. We talked about out-of-body experiences, astral travel, stuff like that. He said, don't try, don't go there. We don't belong there. What you think?
Oh, we are multidimensional beings, you know. We don't belong here at the end of the day, you know. We're here for a limited amount of time, but it's not our home, you know. And a lot of people can feel that from day one. I was one of these people. I always felt like a stranger in my family, in my surroundings, in my world. You know, I was never fully integrated. Even today, I have difficulties accepting this mission that I'm on, because I feel my other layers. And I know that there's other parts of my total self that have incarnated in other places, you know, parallel to what this part of my soul is experiencing now. And I like to go out and explore these other parts of myself, because it gives me a sense of belonging. You know, I'm not alone. Here, I always feel isolated and misunderstood. It's not easy to deal with. But I, you know, to answer the question, we belong out there. You know, our soul is out there. So yeah. There's definitely a reason why we have incarnated, you know, each and every one of us, that there's a free will choice behind that. And you don't want to get lost in just going out of body. And I've met people who've done that, and they're not functioning well anymore in the physical environment, because they spend so much time out there that it becomes hard for them to find their footing here, to ground. So it has to be a balance, you know. And I'm always told by entities when I go out there while I'm exploring that not every door will open for me, you know, that there's things that I'm not supposed to see, learn, because my capacity is that of a pea, you know. I'm nothing. I'm so limited with my hard drive here. It's so slow in processing. And a lot of times when I'm asking questions out there, when I'm trying to explore something, they're just shaking their heads and saying, you know, don't even try. Your little pea brain is not going to comprehend anyway. So don't waste your time here, you know.
Do you think that's limiting? Do you think that's true? If you're a multidimensional being, couldn't you just as easily be able to process information in this body multidimensionally?
Bridge I'm not sure, because we have that challenge, you know, that we're dealing with this hard drive, you know, and as long as we try to bring that information into physical reality and for reasons of expression, there'll always be that challenge, you know, non-physical information and then brain. And brain is just not very functional, you know, and it's enough for to navigate the physical plane, but all the stuff that's out there, man, I don't even want to know, you know. I feel that I've just scratched the tip of the iceberg really with my explorations, and I've been out there for 24 years, so still I'm at the beginning.
Anybody worth their shit says that right there, that they're just at the beginning, even though they've got 24 years under their belt, man. That's awesome. Yeah. That makes me respect you more like you needed it. But I think it's interesting when you start to consider this idea of limitations brought upon us, even in other realms, because it's fantastic. It's awesome. And you may get some amazing feelings out there, but at a level, there may still be a motive that's imparted on you to play a role here, but that also may be an opportunity, like what Morpheus tells Neo in The Matrix. Some rules are meant to be bent, some to be broken. Maybe that's one of those rules, and you can actually upgrade this with the alchemy you have. Maybe that's leftover junk is just to bridge that gap and make you like some super mind where you can really get some telepathy going here. You float around the house, you know? It'd be awesome.
It would be. I'm not sure if I'll ever achieve that, but, you know,
I'm going to cast the chains of limitations off of you, my friend, and I'm going to go ahead and put you in the category of the guy that will figure it out boldly and confidently as the one that should receive it. What do you think about that? What do you think about superpowers here? What do you think about flying around and all of that? Because really what we're talking about with this great revealing, this time of enlightenment, is the shedding of limitations, like we're just talking about here. Do you think this place is capable of us being able to consciously shed the limitations that we can't fly to where we can?
Are you talking about flying in the physical body?
Yeah, like I go, hey man, let's go for a fly instead of a walk, and we just glide over somewhere, you know?
Levitation,
bro. Yeah, maybe.
Well, levitation is a point. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to master that to that degree anytime soon. I know that we're mastering other things, you know, such as telepathy or even remote viewing. You know, it's become such a popular thing to study and to do, and it's so useful in the physical world. So I think, you know, humans are evolving at a speed that we haven't seen before. There's a lot more people that have the ability to, they're clairvoyant or clairaudient. You know, they perceive a larger reality within this reality. You know, look at dogs, for example. My dog, when I take her out for a walk, she will sit down somewhere just randomly. And I don't understand why she sits down. You know, I had to learn her language. Around the corner is something that I can't perceive. My dog perceives it already, way ahead of me. Doesn't mean it's not there, but just because I don't perceive it. It just means that, you know, I'm more limited than my little poodle. And that tells me something.
This is interesting because I just read Exo Vaticana by Thomas Putnam and, Chris Putnam and Thomas Horn, this thick book here. If you guys have never read it or heard of it, I highly recommend it. It's an incredible book. What they talk about in there is sort of this idea of chimeras and utilizing the animal world and its senses in a way that can benefit humanity. And this is where you start getting into genetic manipulation and all that. What do you think of that? What do you think about integrating animal senses into human perception? Do you think it's supposed to happen? Do you think it's natural? Do you think we should be doing it? Or is it one of those Jurassic Park things they didn't ask if they should, you know, kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't think we should. I don't think it'll help humanity. You know, I don't see the benefit. Sometimes I just want to go back to the 50s, you know, where we didn't have all that technology and the evolvement and whatnot, because things were a lot easier and more enjoyable. So I'm not sure. I'm a little bit on the fence about these type of things. But, you know, genetic manipulation will get us there eventually. You know, it's without a doubt. I mean, they've been experimenting with it. Look at the sheep, you know, what was her name? Dolly. You know, it took them a few years and all of a sudden they were able to clone a sheep. And that's the way.
You look at as well just the augmentation going on with this transhumanism occurring, with this integration of machine and mind. And then what that does is, you know, morality we can just talk about. But what's really interesting about that is those type of adaptations, features, or senses could be integrated in there somehow, to where they'd be like, hey, you see like a giraffe at night. And you're like, sweet. And you get like 30 high up vision. But there'd be interesting ways to correlate that, right? So it'd be more tied to a neural network and it would mimic those senses in a sense, reading off of one another. But it would be an interesting selling point for the features, right? To be able to have predator vision at night or something like that. That'd be pretty cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm just not sure how it would serve humanity. You know, if we were all becoming so transparent, I mean, we already are to a certain extent, you know, but with everybody having super senses, you wouldn't be able to hide anything anymore. I just did an interview with a lady in Germany here, and she's so brilliant in her perception is just outstanding. And, you know, when she looks at you, she doesn't look you in the eye. She looks at your energy field and she just starts talking, and it's scary as hell. You know, I'm thinking she's not from this planet. Definitely not. And I've met a few people like that where I intuitively knew they're not from this planet. You know, they've just chosen to be here for whatever reason, but they're not my people. Or I'm just too primitive, you know, for this kind of stuff.
Man, that's so interesting, man. So since my hard drive is also slow, I can't get it out of my head. Everything we talked about so far. So you're saying there is, in fact, an independent existence beyond our physical existence, right?
Independent in what sense?
Do we need to be here?
Oh, no, we don't need to be here. This is just a playground, you know, for the larger consciousness system at the end of the day. You know, the larger consciousness or great consciousness, whatever you want to call it, made that choice to manifest itself and into smaller units of consciousness. And Thomas Campbell would say it's part of a greater evolutionary process. And I would agree, for lack of a better concept. I think his big theory of everything is pretty much the best we have these days. You know, he's got a vast background of out of body travel. At the same time, he was a physicist his entire life, and he has a lot of knowledge as to how things could possibly be orchestrated. And a lot of my experiences that I've had and that I haven't been able to understand fit into his mold, you know, and that shows me that he's really onto something with his theory.
Yeah. I was just curious. We were talking about how awesome it is over there. But still we come back every time. We still come back. And you said it. You said it before. Sometimes we feel like we don't belong here. We don't feel loved. We experience bad things sometimes. Some people experience very bad things, but still we come back here every time after our awesome astral travel, or after our awesome out-of-body experience and whatnot. So this is the part that makes me think.
Well, let me tell you, I'm working on it. You know, I'm working on it. This is my life goal, that one day I can just say, I'm gonna stay here. You know, this is it. I'm just gonna stay here. I'm not coming back. I think, you know, we have to look at the reasons as to why we came here in the first place. You know, why did this unit of consciousness or unit of awareness incarnate into this body at this time, into this reality? There's got to be some kind of a valid reason. And there's definitely some kind of, I don't want to call it force, but, you know, there's rules, I guess, that keep us from just exiting at whenever we want. People exit from this reality all the time. My dad just did that a few weeks ago. He shot himself, and it was a very conscious decision, you know, and yeah, I don't know what his motives were. You know, I'll never find out until I talk to him again, I guess, but he just had it, I guess, you know, he just wanted to leave, and I don't blame him. What keeps us here is our genetics. We have fears that have been engraved into our genetic makeup. You know, we are born with a fear of heights. We are born with a fear of loud noises just to be able to survive in this environment. Most other fears are conditioned, but you know, there is a fear. People fear death. If they wouldn't fear death, they'd be done. You know, most of them anyways, you know. Yeah.
You know where I'm going with this now, Daniel. So I'm curious about the dark entity side of this stuff that you've encountered, or to the, that could answer the question that maybe we don't want to be answered this way, that perhaps the Gnostics and the Cathars got it right with their idea that this is a carbon copy demiurge reality where the soul reincarnation is actually a trap. And whenever you come back here, your memory wipe is posed in the thought that, oh, your consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. And then at some point in that, you know, point of the memory wipe, when you start to relearn, you start to go, well, hang on, why does life need to know rape and suicide and things like that constantly? Like, why does consciousness want to tap into that reality all the time? Then it starts to look a bit more Westworld. Then it starts to look a bit more Westworld, where only the billionaires, these nasty people who run the elite, get to get in and get access to. And then we start to feel the participants in that environment. And then again, this idea of a soul trap reincarnation cycle is a dark path, man. It's a dark way to see this place. So I'm curious if you've taken that path, if you looked at it in that direction, because it sort of plugs in a lot of the atrocities and things like that, but it's not as fun. It's definitely not as fun, I'll tell you that. What do you think of that, to the people that feel this is a prison planet, soul trap, whatever?
I don't buy it, to tell you the truth. You know, I've not found a single indicator that tells me that that's actually true. Again, that's just my perspective. That's just my experience. And I can only talk for myself, but I can also talk for those who've gone before me, you know, and that will include Robert Monroe or William Buhlmann, especially Jürgen Zewi, the German explorer that has been living in Great Britain for many, many years. And he's documented his experiences to greatest detail and has written a number of books about it. And I'm always surprised, you know, how similar a lot of our experiences are, which shows me I'm not making stuff up. You know, I can actually relate to other people's experiences. And none of these people have ever witnessed or found anything that indicates that this is just a trap. I think it's an excuse, you know, for people who don't want to take responsibility. I think we're free will units, you know. There might be certain limitations that we're not able to get across. But in general, the way I experience the afterlife and even things beyond the afterlife don't indicate that it's all just a big scam, you know, that it's being forced on us.
One of the most interesting thoughts that it is a scam from some people, and this is just the side I'm just talking to and about here, would be the people who say that even the next level of this, while you're out of body, yeah, all of it's manufacture a bull, even the sensation that what you're feeling is awesome and great, or that this place is, it's just sort of next level gatekeeping that then you're able to come back and then tell the vast majority of us, y'all being a very small percentage of people who can participate in this, then you have insider info that most of us don't. And when you come back, you disseminate that info as truth. A lot of this happens as well in near-death experiences. They'll have a near-death experience, change their life completely. And then what happens? They start saying, go to the light, everybody, go to the light. Well, this is good for business. as far as a reincarnation trap goes. And just philosophically, if you could look at it that way, you could see how it plugs in and why logically, like if you take all feeling out of it, because it doesn't feel good to look at this, but if you take all logic into it as a system, it functions perfectly. Absolutely perfectly, because you're unaware. Love can be manufactured. Hope can be manufactured. Anybody who's taken MDMA or ecstasy knows, or scopolamine, you know that that's a very real thing that you can be chemically altered to feel and therefore make decisions based on that directive. But right. It's not of you. And so then therefore one could say it's scalable, right? As above, so below. So why wouldn't that apply at the next level? Why wouldn't there be another level of deception? You know, I'm just curious if you've thought about it.
I have thought about it, but it doesn't serve me, you know, and I began questioning the light trap because it's become such a phenomenon over the past few years. You know, everybody's talking about it. It has never been an issue in the 70s or 80s or 90s. Nobody ever talked about the light trap, you know, and all of a sudden someone comes up with this theory and everybody jumps on the bandwagon. And so the light is not an actual light. You know, when you experience the light, it is a process of, it's more like a fog. You're changing frequency. You're leaving the physical environment and you're coming to one of those thresholds where you need a new vibration in order to be able to travel more further, you know, in order to jump the fence, so to say. And, you know, in yoga, we would say we're switching into one of the other energy bodies because they are of a different vibration. So whatever is being perceived as light, is not an actual light. It's just the closest we can come up with in our translation because it feels light, but there's nobody that has a switch. There's no sun, you know, there's no light. It is a state of mind. And once you've come to another level of vibration, you know, you experience differently and the environment changes and it's the next level up in the video game, so to say. And then there's the next light and then there's the next light, but none of it is light really. It's vibration, it's frequency. So the plan that these people have, you know, to when they say don't go to the light, where are they going to go? They're going to stay in the lower astral world, essentially. They're not going to be able to ascend because there's no way around the light. We're beyond time and space as we know it here. So there's no road signs that tell you, you know, don't go through the light. Where else are you going to go? You know, you're either going up in your vibratory level or you're going down or you stay where you are, like many do after death. You know, they're not able to move on because they refuse to or they can't. They're not aware they're dead. But I don't see the point of even talking about a light trap when there's no actual light.
That's the main thing reported by people when they come back. Hey, go to the light, go to the light, go to the light.
Yeah, like it's because it
now,
appears.
Whether it's perceived incorrectly, but that's how it's phrased.
Yeah, it's perceived incorrectly. I'm 100% sure that that's the case.
Yeah, it's just interesting.
Such as the tunnel, you know, the tunnel is not a tunnel. It's an energy field of a certain quality. It feels like a tunnel because it has a certain density. To me, it's almost like I'm jumping into a huge bucket of ink. You know, dark ink, and it surrounds me, and it feels, I can see the you know, that people would describe a tunnel, but they're actually moving through a certain energy, and then they're getting to a different vibratory level and see or feel the light.
It's interesting. Like I said, not a fun perspective. Cathars, Gnostics, they talked about this, man. It's not fun. Nobody wants to sit here and think that we're the product of Sophia's demiurge. It's just kicking about and we're in some sort of soul trap. And then that calls into question why we're here, right? Like, how can we get out? And all of these kind of things. And I don't, again, agree with you that it's a valuable use of your time. But it may be, you know, just an interesting light to show that direction if you can stomach it, man. But it's tough. It really is.
Plus, we also have to ask ourselves, who is that me or you that we talk about? You know, once you leave the physical world, ego is going to shrink tremendously. It's not going to be dissolved immediately after death. But since you're gaining a larger perspective, you're usually, not everybody, but for, I want to say maybe I don't know, I can't say a percentage, but the largest part of souls that exit this world, they have an immediate expansion of awareness. At the same time, ego will shrink. And there, you know, this is all ego stuff that we're talking about, fears, what could be, what, you know, all these, it's just pure ego stuff. And I don't like to spend too much time dealing with that because ego is evil. You know, ego does serve me in this reality a little bit, but for the most part, it's just annoying. It's the reason why you guys can't go out of body, because the ego is keeping you back. You know, and ego makes up stuff. So the real trap here is ego and not the system, I believe.
Yeah, consistent revealing by the phenomena, whatever it is. I think the consistent inconsistency is why it's not trusted by folks who have trust issues. You know what I mean, man? So right. Yeah, maybe that's it. We just have trust issues, Daniel. That's why we can't get out of body. That's fine. I've heard also of people saying things can mess with your body while you're out of it. And then you're saying maybe that's not true. Is that right?
I think, well, it's tricky, you know, and I think it's more complex than we think it is. I don't believe that anybody will take over my body while I'm out, because I'm not out to, I'm out all the time. You know, the body is my playground, and my higher self, my soul, whatever that instance is, the next level up, uses this body. It's not a decision that my ego makes. You know, my ego is not in charge. My ego is just an annoying little chihuahua in this whole game. But my higher self, my larger self, is the one that makes decisions. And I'm this unit of consciousness might not be aware of all the decisions. Definitely not. And is only partially involved in the whole process. But there, I've witnessed things where, I want to use the proper word. It's not so much that someone's taken over your body, but depending on how, what your belief system is and the way you live your life, you know, you're attracting certain energies, and those might feel welcome in your energy field. And those could be of a, let's say, lower nature, you know, non-intelligent entities, trash, you know.
Yeah, like demons or something, right? Yeah.
Well, I'm not a friend of the word demon because it's being misused in our language. But there's definitely entities that are on, they're low intelligence entities, you know, that will attach to certain people because they find resonance in that field. And I witness that a lot in people that consume drugs on a regular basis, or alcoholics, or, you know, people of that nature, because they lower their frequency enough for these other entities to feel attracted. They will, these entities will leave, because when your frequency goes up again, there's nothing they can hold on to. But what we do have, and I learned that the hard way myself, is I had a hypnosis session recently with a lady that deals with these type of phenomena, and she went out, you know, exploring my system, and we actually found an entity that had attached itself to this whatever I am, you know, in this life, at the age of 4 years old, and during hypnosis, I channeled this entity, and it explained that the only disadvantage for me is that my memory is not working 100% in this life. But other than that, it's not causing any physical harm. Although this could be a big lie. You know, we don't know. This is what the entity said. It could be a big lie. I've never felt unwell. I'm generally healthy, extremely healthy. You know, I'm almost 60 and I have no aches and pains. I'm in really good shape. Is it harming me? I don't know, but it was definitely there, you know, because it spoke through me, and it surprised the hell out of me. It wasn't scary, but it was really, it came as a surprise because I wasn't expecting it. So there's definitely stuff out there that we need to be aware of. I'm not sure to what extent they're able to manipulate us.
Yeah, I'd say I just have a few more questions on that before I hop out of body then. We'll just get that sorted at a level. You report back to us. Let me know when you guys get that biff sorted where I know nothing's going to be implanted in me or take me over or say something mean to my wife that I don't mean, you know, while I'm not around or something like that, that kind of thing. Like I'm not into that. So yeah, that's a bit of apprehension on my part. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've talked to Preston Dennett. Yeah. We've talked about Preston Dennett with Preston Dennett about the topic, and he's out of body all the time, man. He's out of body all the time, or astral travels all the time. Love goes out, Preston Dennett. Love you. And
yeah, can you guys meet together, Oliver? Do you guys do that? Do you plan for to meet in astral spaces and stuff like that?
I've actually done that with a friend for a couple of years. We've done team explorations, and it only works to a certain extent, you know, because much as in this reality, you always create your own reality. And then realities begin to overlap. So we had a lot of mutual experiences where the data we received was similar, but then on other days, it just wouldn't work out as well. You know, at the end of the day, we were able to collect a lot of valuable stuff. But then again, we're both humans. So we're limited in that. It would be much more fun to do partner explorations with someone who's not from this planet, you know, with an alien.
Oh yeah, yeah. We've talked to Preston Dennett about what you just talked about. When you go out of body, and your body is unprotected, so could it be possible that your body is taken over by some kind of entity or demons or whatever you want to call it? I'm thinking there are people out there that claim that. They need an exorcist because their body
possessed.
They're possessed by demons, or bad entities, and they weren't out of body. You know what I mean? So when you're out of body, you have an unprotected shell. People talk about the silver cord and stuff like that, but I mean, I'm not sure about that, man.
The shell is never protected. You know, you gotta rethink this whole thing about the shell. The shell is a manifestation of consciousness, you know, and all these entities out there are also part of the larger consciousness system. Whatever you attract in your energy field is able to, you know, attach to yourself. And those can also be beneficial entities, you know, that come in with a very creative force and bring through very excellent and great stuff. It's not all evil. But it depends on the person and the belief system that person carries and the way that person lives his life, the kind of resonance there is for these type of entities. And, you know, when you talk about exorcism, had you told me that 3 months ago, I would have probably said, it's not part of my experience, but since I've done this hypnosis session, since I've talked to a bunch of people who've been through the same kind of work, I've watched a lot of video material that the practitioner showed me. And what she does is actually exorcism. You know, it is exorcism. It's not religious exorcisms, but it definitely is. She's freeing energies from someone's energy field. A lot of these entities though, and she claims, and I can only repeat what she says, is 8 out of 10 are so-called IPs, incarnation personalities of your own reincarnation cycles. You know, an aspect of your soul that's gotten stuck and it attaches to yourself for various reasons. So they're not strange entities. They're actually parts of yourself that have lived before and they're unable to go to the next vibratory level. But then there's these other 20% that are strangers. And in my case, it turned out to be a stranger. It was not an IP. So I found that a little bit worrisome, but at the end of the day, you know, what can I do? She was able to detach it from my system. I'm not sure if that's gonna be lasting or maybe that thing will come back. I don't know. And I'm intending to explore this further because I find it highly fascinating.
Do you think that there are, in fact, entities out there that have a... Do you think entities to have a sense of good and bad? Are there bad entities and good entities? Do they know what good and bad is?
You know, that's part of our perception, really, because we live in, right. in duality. You know, we need good and bad in order to differentiate things. But I wouldn't use those terms in the non-physical. It's more the non-intelligent or the desperate or those who don't know any better. I don't think there is a bad intention. It's just a coincidence that there is a fit, you know, in certain cases. I'm not sure about other planetary, you know, inhabitants such as aliens. There's so many different types of entities out there that you would have to dissect every single one of them to see, do they live in a system that is similar to ours, where there is good and bad, so they carry that in their system, or are they from outside duality and they don't even know what the hell good or bad is? They just are, you know, so that needs to be determined.
And what if they brought entities in with them that can get attached to us that are no good and then shape humanity as like parasites? You know, if an alien comes here with astral shit of its own in its own body because it didn't clean its chakras that morning, it had a fight with its wife or whatever, and then now it's got these entity attachments, now they're set loose on the earth. It's like, man, I feel so much better after going to Earth. Yeah, man, because you dumped your garbage here, man. Thanks a lot, right?
Yeah.
It's just interesting, man. The whole thing, the tapestry is just fascinating when you really see it.
It is. It is. But again, you know, we're multidimensional beings, and the part that is perceiving here, you know, it's just a tiny part of our greater self. So there's other parts of us that are incarnated in other places, and they might be causing havoc, you know. The other Brandon might be evil, you know, and might be out
this
there.
This is what I'm saying. I kind of like, I've thought about this. I'm like, well, what kind of asshole version of me is out here that made me got stuck in this prison, or this demiurge thought it'd be a good idea to make me reform over a certain number of lifetimes? Like, what did I do? You know what I mean? And it's kind of one of those things that you're like, let's say your partner gets mad at you and she's just like, meh. And you're just like, what did I, you know, what's wrong? What's going on? Meh. And they don't tell you, right? But you're automatically being punished. And so therefore your mind's going like, well, what did I do? Am I not good enough? Is there even a God? Like, are we in a prison planet? You start getting all this because you don't get feedback. And so you start, it's a mind fuck, man. It's very interesting.
Yeah. But I don't think we're going to get to the bottom of it anytime soon.
I agree. And that's why conversations like this, things like this are beautiful and ever going, you know. That's why the name is Expanding Reality, right? We're just still doing it. We're just going to keep expanding here. Oliver, this has been awesome, man. I really appreciate you. It's really cool. Yeah.
Well, really thank cool. you. Likewise. I enjoyed this talk.
That was great. Yeah. But let's come to an end. I think Brendan's got to run. He has another date in a few minutes. Yeah. Like Brendan said, it was awesome. Really enjoyed talking to you, Oliver. And yeah, let's repeat that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Anytime.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.